Hello and welcome back to How We Roll. I am incredibly happy tonight to let you know that we are returning with at least part of the group that recorded the Peru chapter of Mass Nine Athatap, and we are playing Chaosium's Flotsam and Jetsam. My name is Joe Trier, and tonight I'll be playing Major Edmund Fletcher, a tall, slim, greyish-looking man in his latter years. He lost a leg in the First World War, so he has a prosthetic, so he walks in it with a cane.
I'm just hung up on the fact that you're saying he's in his latter years and he's 10 years younger than I am. I know who's dying first.
Oof. Life expectancy
How old is he?
You said 46.
Oh, in my head he was in his 60s. Oh. Owen, welcome back to the show. How are you doing tonight? And who are you playing?
Thanks, Joe. I'm doing very well. I'm playing Anthony Marsden, who is a journalist with an occult magazine. I don't know, what do you define the genre as magazine as, Scott?
Well, we'll get into that.
Occult,
yeah, we'll get into a little bit about what kind of publication it is you're working for, but let's just say it's a lively one.
Okay, so he's a New York boy born in Yonkers, kind of a slight, tall, like slim 22-year-old, quite fashionable, is often wearing kind of scarves and a sports coat even. And the reason he's working with this magazine, he kind of had a spinster aunt that lived with his family growing up, and she was the seventh daughter of his grandmother, who was a seventh daughter and locally was thought to have unexplained powers and was a matchmaker and kind of all this pseudo mystical kind of mystery around her more than anything else. So he's kind of looking into, he has a belief that he'd seen stuff that could be explained as coincidence, but a little too often when he was younger. And he wonders, is there something out there? So he's looking to find out. That's me.
Amazing. And next up, Seth. Seth, welcome back to the show. Great to have you back. How are you doing, and who are you playing tonight?
I'm doing great. This feels like the band's getting back together. I'm thrilled to be playing with you guys. Today I'll be playing, see if I can get this voice, Nigel Dharma from St. Charles, Missouri, moved to New York, and I'm a photojournalist. I'm extremely pretty with kind of a long blonde hair. I look like the biggest hipster of the 1920s you ever seen. And my most cherished possession is my Kodak camera, because when I was 15 years old, I saw it's kind of like a Bigfoot, but it's a natural to the Missouri, DeConte, big hairy thing. I want to get myself a picture of something like that. Figure I'll get myself real famous. I always smell a lot like cologne because it's covering up all the chemicals I use to process all my photos. And I like to roll cigarettes when I'm nervous, which means I'm going to be spending a lot of time just rolling cigarettes for everybody, probably.
Amazing. Your character and my character are just like hipster college kids, a scarf wearing blazer going journalist, and a guy with new technology and a camera.
I'm already picturing Russell Brand and Elfield. <Mike. laughs>
I love the hipsters meet the mythos twist this might have. So,
who will our listeners root for?
And our last player tonight. Welcome back to the show, Veronica. Thank you so much for joining us again. How are you doing, and who are you playing?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me back. It's so good to be back in the chair with you guys. I am playing Frida May. She is actually in her latter years, 59 years, because that's as old as I wanted to make her without getting additional penalties. So she is a diver. So she started out, you know, kind of doing some sideshow circus work. And she really aged out of that, but she is still just darling, beautiful. And she's from Minnesota, so she has a little bit of a twang to her and, you know, is really looking out to be a help to this party and doing whatever I got to do to make a couple bucks to send home to my grandson, Douglas. So it's real good to meet all of you.
Oh, brilliant.
That's the voice.
Oh,
I love it.
Man. I was going to try a voice. I'm glad I didn't know.
I think you're the only one that's prettier than I am. You were like originally a 90 till you got to your age.
Yeah, I was originally a 90 until my age gave me some sunspots and wrinkles. You know. Yeah.
And our keeper of unknown lore tonight. Again, thank you so much, Scott, for agreeing to take our group through this. I'll let you introduce it. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, my pleasure. I've really been looking forward to gaming with you guys again. And yeah, I hope that this will live up to, some of the madness of our previous escapades. So this campaign is a little different than what we played before. It's not Pulp Cthulhu for a start. It is just straight Call of Cthulhu. And it's a sort of modular campaign that is part of the Cult of Chaos program. So this is the program that Chaosium do to basically let people run games in gaming shops or conventions to try to bring Call of Cthulhu to new audiences. So this is, it is sort of an introductory scenario. Well, sort of. Yeah, the Flotsam and Jetsam campaign was something that I did the development work for, but I didn't actually write any of the individual scenarios. This opening scenario, the Star Brothers, was written by Brian Quartermanche, who some people may know for having written the Genius Loci scenario in Doors to Darkness, the one set in the Danvers Asylum. And he comes from Massachusetts. He has a great love of the area, and a lot of that feeds into this scenario. So this scenario kicks off in October of 1923. We're in New York City, to begin with, and your characters are all working for Strange But True magazine. Sorry, Strange But True. It's got an exclamation mark. You can tell that it's a quality publication because it's got an exclamation mark in the title. So Strange But True is sort of, I guess, somewhere between Ripley's Believe It or Not and the National Enquirer. It doesn't necessarily make stories up, but at the same time, you know, it goes out of its way to publish the weird. The editor, publisher, who all of you know, Elijah Cleaver, has got fairly eclectic tastes. He gathers the stories from all corners of the globe, some of them off wire services, some of them researched by his own staff, and yeah, puts out this weekly publication that's got quite a large readership and covers strange stuff. Now, I can sort of understand how both Anthony Marsden and Nigel Darmont have ended up working for Strange But True, because obviously you're both journalists of a type.
I resent the implication that we're journalists of a type.
No, I just meant that one is a photojournalist as opposed to a journalist. But yes.
I know.
But obviously, Strange But True employs a wide variety of people to, you know, sometimes in dangerous situations, protect the journalists, or because they've got special skills in terms of research, or have just proved themselves to be useful at gathering this kind of information. So let's start with Major Fletcher. How has Major Fletcher ended up working for Strange But True?
Well, after the war, I resigned my commission and headed off into the great unknown to look for answers. I don't want to go into too much detail right here or right now, but during a nasty, nasty trench battle, something happened that I couldn't and still can't explain. My entire regiment was wiped out. Although I survived, I lost my leg here below the knee. The things I saw don't fit into my understanding of this world or the next. And since then, I have traveled the globe, searching and documenting strange sights. Somehow, I have ended up in North America, and I have agreed to sell some of my writings to Strange But True.
Marvelous.
I still love the idea that we know that you're really not that old.
Oh, yes. He's got an old, slow, croaky voice. He's a really fit 42-year-old. Yeah.
But it's also this idea that he is this veteran of the First World War, which you make it sound like was ages ago, which it actually at this stage finished 5 years back.
So pretty much he finished the war, spent a bit of time at home, got on a boat, went to America.
He travelled the world. He was in France. He went to the UK, made it to Ireland before he got to New York. That's his travelling the world.
Well, selected parts of the world, highlights. So how about Frieda May? How has she ended up working for Strange But True?
Oh, so, most of my childhood, I spent around in the circus just, meeting all sorts of different people. And, there's people with just piercings and tattoos and, all of that's very strange. But, there are actually real people out there that have been touched by some kind of outer beings. I'm sure of it. Myself being one of them. And, I have a supernatural ability in order to, go and dive pretty deep underwater. So, I can hold my breath quite longer than just about anybody that I know. And so, I find that to be quite profitable, especially when it comes to finding old treasures and getting those appraised. And, all the people that I've come to know, I know some pretty shady folk out there, but I also know some folk that'll be willing to pay a pretty penny for just about anything that I find. That's the life of a former mermaid. So, and this old publication, it kind of pays quite a bit for whatever it is that I'm bringing in. So, I've got a grandchild and a great grandchild, and milk isn't free. I gotta send them something.
I don't know about everyone else, but I really want to just pause the scenario at this stage and spend the rest of the evening hearing Frieda May's life story.
I want to know everything about this woman.
I think I pictured mermaids in the Great Lakes. When you say mermaids, it's like someone with Minnesota accents.
Oh yeah, we got them.
I vote that she does all of our talking for us.
I want to intimidate someone, and then the Minnesota accent comes out. It doesn't have the same effect as it. Oh, I have a very special set of skills. I can't do a Minnesota accent. I just sound like a leprechaun when I try to do it. Oh, Bigara.
I just, Veronica, you walked in and you slammed the law down on voices today.
Thank you. I didn't know until I went and got a drink, and I was like, I think we'll do Minnesota for this one. Well,
oh, it's perfect. I am absolutely perfect.
Extremely impressed. Yeah.
Thanks.
So, Seth, you said that Nigel is obsessed with trying to find photographs of cryptids. Well, in particular, what did he call it? This variant of Bigfoot?
Tecanti. It's a big hairy creature. It lives in the forest by the Missouri River.
And is this what has brought Nigel into the orbit of Strange But True? Is this what he's basically bringing to the magazine?
Yeah, I'm... a lot of people don't believe in stuff like Tecanti. People thought my grandpa was a little crazy because he told me all about it. But, I saw it, and I want to be able to take a picture, but I also want to I want to be famous for that picture. I want people to know that, I'm the one that was the first to capture this on film. Mm-hmm. And I want my name to be associated with that. This is going to be my big break because, once I get a good picture with this, I can then move on to like a bigger publication, because they'll take me seriously as a real journalist.
Fantastic. And Owen, obviously, Anthony Marsden is a journalist and a fledgling journalist. How, as a journalist or a would-be journalist, has he ended up at Strange But True of all places?
Anthony wouldn't have had the most traditional route of studying and becoming a journalist. Just as a kid, he would talk to his aunt about legends, how she has all of these talents, as they were known in the family, of matchmaking. And, she would pray. They were a Catholic family growing up, pray for if a child went missing, all this kind of stuff. And then from there, went to libraries and just did his own research. And through his own interest and subscription, he started working kind of for free for the publication. And eventually, people just keep leaving the job because it's not very well paid. And he basically got handed a pen and paper and was told to go down to Coney Island to basically investigate a ghost in their haunted house, I guess. We'll go to haunted house.
Fantastic. Well, the four of you have been called together to go and see Elijah Cleaver about a new story. And you know, it's not unusual for groups of people to be sent off together on some of these stories. There was an incident a couple of years back where Mr. Cleaver sent just a couple of journalists out to investigate some strange church in Providence, and the people didn't come back. And ever since then, he's been a bit flighty about some stories and making sure that the teams he sends out can look after themselves, or at least aren't completely unprepared if there's anything potentially weird going on. But yes, it is this late October day, and you arrive at the Strange But True offices. They're in a fairly run-down area in the Bowery in New York, and the offices themselves take up an entire floor of what may once have been a textile building. Right. Certainly, you know, when you arrive there, it is, as those of you who've worked there before know, a hive of activity in the bullpen. There's, you know, people banging away on typewriters and, you know, phoning up to fact-check stories and generally having conversations about very weird things. But you're shown straight through to Mr. Cleaver's office, his corner office, which is actually fairly modest size. And when you get there, and it's just after lunch, and he's got the remains of his lunch sitting on a plate just off to one side, and his desk is a riot of paperwork. There's, you know, great heaped piles of magazines and publications and notes and obviously stories to be edited all over the place. You know, some of which look like they're in grave danger of falling over if you look at them too hard. But Cleaver himself beams as the four of you are shown in. He's a man in his mid-50s. He's got a fairly ruddy complexion, fairly thinning hair, a big bushy walrus moustache. He wears a suit that was probably tailored, but he's put on a bit of weight since then, and it's, you know, the waistcoat is struggling. But he stands up, and as the four of you come in, and say, "Ah, good. Come in. Sit down. Clear that seat off over there. Sit down."
Okay, I'll clear the chair off. Sit down.
So yeah, I've got this story. It's not much to go on at the moment, but I think it could be a good one. It's how well do any of you know Massachusetts?
I was born in Massachusetts.
Ah, good start. So, yeah, there is this town called Ipswich, on the edge of some salt marshes, and there's been some strange stuff going on up there. In fact, rather than me just telling you, why don't I just show you this, he says. And I'm going to post a link in the chat. So, would one of you like to read that out for the listeners?
I know who my vote would be.
Yes, I was just resisting.
Is this a debate?
Okay, then. All right, then. So, here we go. Spaceman Needs a Ride Home by Elsie Caldwell, special to the Ipswich Inquirer. A strange being has been haunting Ipswich recently, causing no little stir. His name is Otis Fry, and he claims to be from another planet. Whenever Star Fry hails from, he's been to a boon to local hardware and electrical supply merchants, purchasing all manner of implements for, affirms Fry, a trip to outer space. This reporter caught up with Fry as he was leaving Gore's Hardware on Main Street. For a spaceman, Fry looks human enough, far from the modern Adonis. He claims to be from Neptune and needs equipment to signal his fellow star brothers to retrieve him from Earth. Fry did not loiter long, claiming that government men are following him.
Fry claims they wish to steal his technology and study his physique for science. Local merchants aren't complaining as Fry pays for his space supplies with ad gold coins. Says Chester Gore of Gore's Hardware, I don't care if he's from Jupiter or Tahiti. As long as he keeps paying with these gold coins, he can be from wherever he wants. While Fry's claims are outlandish, his lunacy seems contagious as several local citizens have lately reported seeing strange sights, suggesting that Essex County may be hosting a convention of moon men. What with reports of strange lights flitting all over the salt marshes in the past several nights and odd noises being heard, the place is abuzz with Fry's talk of his long-lost space brothers. Rumor has it at least one individual has seen a moon man late one night, although this reporter suspects it might be moonshine and not moon men behind the report. Ipswich police state they have found no mystery airships landing in our woods and marshes. Several town folk report being approached by men in dark trench coats and fedoras asking for Otis Fry. Perhaps Fry's assertions are correct that G-men are on his tail, although they are more likely interested in Fry's gold coins than his purported origin from the planet Neptune. Should any Ipswich Inquirer subscribers happen to take a trip to Fry with another planet, we would appreciate their getting in touch with this reporter, as it would be quite an exclusive. In all probability, the farthest Mr. Fry will get is a one-way trip to Danvers State Hospital. We wish him Godspeed. It seemed a little biased, if you ask me.
Yeah, yes, I agree. The reporting on that is, well, enthusiastic, but it's not quite the kind of tone we'd take. But, I mean, this is part of why I wanted to send you up there to write our version of the story, because, I mean, however outlandish this looks, there's something going on there, isn't there? There's definitely something happening, and I want to know everything about this. I want to know who this Otis Fry man is. What's his story? Is there a story? And also these gold coins. Why is he paying for everything with gold coins, of all things? And what is he doing with all this hardware he's purchasing? That's just strange, isn't it? And it's not just him. This story of people seeing mystery lights and moon men, unless the reporter's just making all that up, that's evidence that there's something going on. Is all that just related to Fry? Is it something else? And is the government really involved, or is she just making that up as well? So, yes, I want you to dig into everything.
Major Fletcher has both hands on his walking stick, and he leans forward and goes,
"It is absolutely fascinating. I mean, you've brought some of the salient points forward at first, but those gold coins, I mean, where on earth would he find such things in Innsmouth? In Massachusetts. I can't imagine such things being native to the area. I'd be incredibly interested in exploring this story."
"Yeah, nothing comes of it. You know, maybe he'll give us a gold coin. That sounds pretty, what I can say is that I'm pretty interested in going. If you want to send me, and space and the deep of the ocean are pretty much the same. So, you know, if he's seeing spacemen, maybe he's actually just been underwater and holding his breath a little too long.
If I can get myself a good photograph of a spaceship, definitely I'm going.
Or even better, a photograph of a moon man.
Well, the problem is the moon man sounds like he looks like just an average Joe. But, you know, maybe if he's wearing a space helmet and coming out of a spaceship, that's right there. That's front page material."
So Anthony's kind of leaning off to the side against the wall, listening to all this. And he's kind of more interested in kind of more occult things as opposed to space. Like, he's not totally on board with all the what he sees as madcap stories of sad but true. So he kind of steps forward and goes, "Do we know this Elsie Caldwell, Ipswich Inquirer, like, do they do stuff like this before, or is this a small town paper trying to get serialized and make a name for themselves?"
"This is just a local paper for Ipswich. I mean, Ipswich isn't a big town, so this is a little paper for a little town. So, Yeah, I don't think... Well, maybe she's trying to make a name for herself. Maybe she's trying to get the attention of someone outside Ipswich. I mean, it certainly worked because I'm sending you. But, yes, it might be worth talking to the woman and seeing what it is she's up to. Maybe she does have other motives.
So she's not like a well-known occult reporter or anything. Like her name's unfamiliar to Elijah, I can gather from the way he's replied, is it?
Oh, yeah, I mean, if you're asking, yeah, I've never heard of her before. Then again, I'd never heard of Ipswich until a few days ago.
I think it might be worth looking her up, see if she's done stories like this before, either Ipswich or another town. But
well, maybe you can check the bulk of the paper up there.
How long is it going to take us to get to Ipswich?
Well, not long. I've taken the liberty of arranging train tickets for you. There's a train heading up late this afternoon up to Boston, and then there's a branch line on the Boston and Maine Railroad that will take you all the way to Ipswich. And probably take you about 4 or 5 hours.
That sounds good, because I really enjoy the sandwiches that they serve in the lunch cart.
I love this character. It's just
like, she so holds him on the Boston and Maine carriage and the best sandwiches in the East Coast.
But yes, that is a good point. Obviously, I shall be covering all your expenses while you're up there, including the sandwiches on the train up. Yes, any accommodation and meals, just keep receipts for those. You can have a $5 per day per diem as well, and then there'll be a $10 a piece bonus for the story once it's submitted. Does that sound equitable?
That sounds very fine to me. I want to try some of these sandwiches that Frida keeps talking about.
Oh, they're real fancy. They're a chicken salad sandwich, and you know they put raisins in them and little chunks of pineapple sometimes, and I just don't know what to do with that. But I've never had such a sweet and delicious sandwich. And sometimes they even put them on a croissant, like from France.
I have never loved a character more than I love Rita.
Oh, it just described a nightmare sandwich to me as well. Chicken and fruit. That's the most horrific thing I've ever heard in a Call of Cthulhu game.
But on the croissant.
It sounds nightmarish, but I want to try it because she loves it.
I mean, I guess it's a job. So, like, is there anything else we need to know?
I don't know. Is there anything that you think you need to know?
Now, have you gotten us a hotel there? We're going to have to find a hotel once we get up to Ipswich.
Well, you're going to have to find the hotel, I'm afraid. But from what I've heard, it's quite a small town, so it should be difficult to miss the hotel.
Okay. And how long do you think how long are you expecting us to be there?
I don't think this is going to be a big story. I would have thought a few days.
Okay. Just want to tell my roommate.
So he can water fight kisses it.
Oh, good.
So as I'm, like, I would have grown up kind of to a young teenager kind of in Boston with the family moved to New York for work. Would I know anything about the area? Be kind of true folklore? Like, everyone in America knows stories of Salem growing up, but if you're even in Boston, is there any, like, local legends or anything like that?
Give me an education roll.
Ooh. Education or history, and they're both the same. Actually, yeah. So that make a difference. They're both 66. Don't know much. It's a bit early, so we got to chase some luck as well, to be fair.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ipswich isn't, as you've just heard, a particularly large town, so it's perhaps not too surprising that you haven't heard of it. Or rather, not. I mean, you may have heard of it, but not too surprising that you don't really know anything about it.
I know where it is in the map kind of thing, but that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's an Ipswich in England, and I don't know if it's related to them at all.
Oh, well, we weren't too creative when we started over here on this side of the Atlantic. We just started naming everything New York and, you know, just taking all the names over because we didn't want to have to think up our own. So got a lot of repeats over here.
No, and obviously, as fine a town as Ipswich, you couldn't go wrong with naming after that. I believe they do good sandwiches there as well.
Do they? Oh my gosh.
So I've heard, yeah. And good cup of tea as well.
Freedom must be protected at all costs.
I guess we mosey on out, do we?
Well,
I
yeah.
I Western. I said mosey. I've never seen mosey in my life.
Unless any of you have got any questions or anything you want to do before you leave the Strange But True offices, yeah, I mean, we can cut to the train journey and the sandwiches on the way up.
On the way out, I'm just going to be looking for a small postcard, and I'll just send it. Hugs and kisses to Douglas from his grandma, and slip that in the post office, and that'll be it. Anytime I see something that looks like a cool sight, that's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, you end up catching the train as planned up to Boston and then across to Ipswich. And it is, yeah, by the time you arrive, it's probably early evening. Let's say it's about 7 p.m. when the train rolls in. Now, from the landscape that you've passed through just before you arrive, and this is close to the sea, it's not actually on the sea, but there is a river that runs through it. There are some salt marshes nearby, and certainly in the evening light, you can just sort of make out the expanse of salt marshes leading over towards the sea. The town itself, when the train arrives, yeah, as you've heard, isn't a particularly big one. Yeah, it's not a one-horse town by any means, but yeah, you saw a few factories on the outskirts, and yeah, there are a few streets of shops and residences and so on, but it's not a thriving metropolis.
What time do you say it was when we arrived?
It's about 7 p.m., so at this time of year, yeah, it's getting dark.
Well, say we go ahead and check into a hotel. It's probably a little late to go check out the newspapers yet, but
I mean, we could drop off the bags and then go check the marshes for the lights, I guess.
Yeah, we could do that. Say, thanks to Prohibition, there ain't no bars we could go and just ask around, but we go walk around the salt marsh for a bit, see if we can see any lights or swamp people.
I mean, honestly, I've been sat on that train for 4 or 5 hours. Despite the delicious sandwiches and fine company, stretching my legs across the salt marsh sounds like a fine idea.
Yeah, I never had pineapple on a sandwich before. That was rather intriguing.
It's something else, isn't it?
Did you say stretching my leg, Joe, or legs? I actually thought you said leg. I started laughing. You didn't say leg, did you? I was like, man, he's really into his character. But he just said one leg. I was like, this is great.
I do take my big trunk with me that has my diving suit. So it is really stupidly big and heavy.
30 pounds nice. Of cast iron.
To the hotel or to the salt marsh?
Not to the salt marsh.
Yeah, certainly. You can see that there is a hotel just across the road from the station. It's called the Gray's House Hotel. It's, just a large wooden building that, I mean, in the twilight, I mean, it might be painted grey, you're not sure, but there's definitely a sign outside saying Gray's House Hotel.
Well, I guess we can go ahead and check in there. And is that many people in there?
No, I mean,
like restaurant or anything like that with people?
There is a small restaurant in the hotel. It looks pretty quiet. And certainly, when you go to the check-in desk, there is a young woman who looks a little surprised to see people turning up at this time of day, but wanders over and gives you a big smile. She says, welcome to Ipswich.
Oh, thank you very much. We're going to be checking in for a couple days here and, just seeing what it is there to see around.
Sightseers. And she looks really surprised at that. You're not here for business, then?
Well, sort of we are. What's your name, darling?
Oh, God. This is the first time in ages I have not had a big list of NPC names ready. This is a failure.
We need to ask everyone's name.
Yeah.
Tell us about your family backstory and all their names.
Do you have any children, Helen?
Was it
Helen.
Helen. Oh, Helen. Helen, have you, I was just kind of wondering, my name's Nigel, there are some reports of kind of some strange lights going on out in the salt marshes and that thing. You know anything about that?
Oh, that was that story in the newspaper last week. Yes. Yeah. I haven't seen them myself, but why would I go out to the salt marshes at night?
Well, yeah, it's probably not the best thing for a nice woman to do that, but you know anybody that has seen those?
No, but I mean, between you and me, I hear there's bootleggers out there. Oh, you might not want to go wandering around there.
Oh, that's a good thing to know there. I don't want to come across any bootlegger in the dark night at a salt marsh. That sounds like it wouldn't end well. And, but you don't know anybody that might be familiar with that area that we might be able to talk to?
A guide, perhaps.
Yeah, like a guide.
I can't think of anyone. I'll tell you what. If ask me again tomorrow. I'll ask around a few friends and see if anyone knows. But
Helen, you're such a dear. Thank you.
We don't get a lot of sightseers here, so it's not a question I've ever been asked before.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And let's just go ahead and we'll check into the hotel and blindly wander out and hope we don't come across a bootlegger.
I don't know, we can get some alcohol. Yeah, that's not it. I was like, me and the bootlegger sounds great. We're in a podunk town. Getting drunk is the only option.
Oh, God. Just getting drunk on bathtub moonshine and wandering on a salt marsh at night. That cannot possibly go badly.
No, yeah. That's the worst gonna happen.
And they wonder where the story's coming from.
hang on. I am. And I guess the mage is sort of being stood looking at, I don't know, any paintings or sort of interesting decor.
Yeah, well, I don't know about interesting decor, but there are a few paintings of the landscape. And the landscape around here is a bit bleak. I mean, apart from the salt marshes, I mean, when you go inland a bit, it's a bit less, well, obviously marshy, but it's still not exactly striking landscape.
And he'll unpack his Macintosh and galoshes, and he'll also pull out his service revolver and just holster it in his coat. And if anyone notices, he'll just say, just in case we encounter any bootleggers. Wouldn't want to be caught flat-footed, as it were.
Well, no, I mean, Dax, if they try to take my camera, man, I'm glad you got that.
Old habits don't really die out, unfortunately. Hopefully it won't need it.
I mean, are we expecting to be shooting people?
Maybe a warning shot across their bow.
Oh, in America, you should always be expecting to shoot somebody.
I mean, I don't know. It feels like we're definitely progressing as a country from that. And 10, 20 years, that'll all be gone.
This old woman just gives you a... I don't know.
Gun reform, any day now.
I just want a best of quotes track of Frida's like, you in America, you always should be ready to shoot somebody. just like a play that on demand. Just any little reason.
She's writing a loving postcard to her grandson again. Just the most ominous quote. Or just sending that to the grandson. Remember, Grandson Douglas, always ready to shoot someone in America. Lots of love, Grammy.
Okay, so if it is October and we're near salt marshes, I'm going to go put up my bag and I'm going to come down with my rifle because guess what, y'all? It's duck hunting season. That's why people would be in the marshes anyways. So, you know, perhaps we go under their guise of just wanting to get a duck or two. I wish we had a dog.
What, sorry?
Well, it's the season for ducks.
And you can't, and if you want to hunt a duck, it's got to be at the dusk. That's when they're coming down or going up. So this is a great time for us to go out and hunt for ducks.
This is the greatest character I have ever seen.
And with the accent, sounds like she wants to get a hunting duck to go hunting ducks as well.
Oh, they're traitor ducks. Yeah. Smoking a cigarette. Like, hey, bastards are over there. You can shoot them all you want. Totally. Catch me after the flock.
So if we're going to go tramping around in the salt marshes, I'll have some big gators on and have my rifle and just be ready to go.
Fantastic.
I look like I'm suited up for a trek through the salt marshes.
I take off my waistcoat because I want to look a little more rugged. Just have a shirt on and one scarf as opposed to the three I normally have on. Because, like, Anthony's a
Oh, Han, you're going to freeze.
He's like a bohemian kind of, like, yeah. There's nothing functional about his outfit. And it doesn't even look that good. But he thinks he looks amazing. He's a 22-year-old with no more sense.
He's probably actually more functional when he has three scarves.
Yeah. And I do think, so, permanently Anthony would... Tony, as he's known to his friends, will go around with he just has like a ring bound binder notebook, a small little pocketbook like a cop would have that he'd be writing notes on, and he's taking it in. So the things he's kind of really focused on is he doesn't really buy into the story, but maybe he can see the G-men looking for the gold being a possible thing, so he's looking for signs of, you know, any government involvement, any cops that are around the place, stuff like that, just kind of scoping out the area as we're leaving the hotel and around the salt marshes, obviously.
Okay. Well, as you leave the hotel, I mean, it's obviously quite dark by this stage because it's about 8 o'clock by the time you've checked in and unpacked and so on. So, yeah, you know which direction the salt marshes are in, and there's a bit of moonlight. But by the time you leave the outskirts of the town itself over towards the marsh, I mean, there is a road that leads off into the marsh that you can follow quite easily. But, yeah, by the time you get outside the town, it is pretty much pitch dark. There is some illumination through the clouds overhead, but you're going to have to rely on flashlights, really, just to have any idea of where you're going. Okay. What I would like is a group luck roll. So, who has got the lowest luck?
I have 45 luck.
Anyone got less than
45? I rolled really badly on my luck. I've only got 45.
I actually haven't rolled my luck.
I have 60.
Well, I'm between you two. I'm at 55.
It's 3d6 by 5, isn't it?
That's right, yep.
I never rolled my luck, sorry, one second. Watch as I fail this, because I never have good luck in any of my characters.
Oh, 70.
Okay, I'll take it.
That's pretty good.
I'll take it. 70, right.
So, character sheet. It's all down to Joe.
Okay. I got a 61 versus 45. That's a fail.
Okay. So you walk off down this winding road into the salt marshes. I mean, there's obviously vehicle traffic that goes down this road, but it isn't really paved. It's more of an overglorified dirt track than a road. And as you head down, you can see, or rather you can hear from behind you, first of all, the sound of a motor. And looking back, you can see some headlights moving down the road in your direction.
Does this road go anywhere else other than the salt marsh? Like, is it going up to another town, or are we on like a sidetrack?
Hey, well, at the moment, you haven't really asked anyone, so you don't know. It's not signposted as going anywhere else, but it obviously is.
Okay, well, I think I'm gonna step off the road if there's a car coming, but I want to be very careful because I don't want to, like, go falling into the salt marsh and ruin my camera.
Okay. How about the rest of you?
I mean,
Part of me says we should duck down and see who they are, but at the same time, we could be wandering anywhere, maybe chatting to a local. Be they helpful or nefarious, may actually be useful.
I don't know why we don't just wave him down and talk to him.
Well, I agree.
Is that Frida's plan then?
Yeah.
So, are both Frida and the Major staying out on the road then, or is it just Frida?
I think Tony would definitely step off the road when he sees Nigel step off the road. He's very much a city boy, and he's like, these hicks out here could do God knows what to who knows who, you know?
Well, I'm not hiding. I'm just stepping off the road, so, you know.
Tony's definitely not hiding, but if he's not seen, he'd be quite happy. So he's definitely making himself smaller and standing in the ditch, you know? So if someone calls him out, like, hey, you there, they go,
Tony's
oh, hi,
not
hello,
hiding,
you know?
He's just trying not to be seen.
Yes, exactly. That, you know, it's one of these, and if you get...
Careful,
you know, that's the opposite of what you want to do when you're beside our roadway. You want to be seen.
Yeah, well, careful. There's a lot of eels, man. You don't want the eels to eat you.
There's no eels.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Don't give Scott ideas. He hasn't got names for NPCs. He's got 19 creatures and kill you in a marsh.
So Frida and the Major out on the road see this car come around the corner, and it's a fairly big black car. Well, when you think it's black, it's a bit difficult to tell the colour in the moonlight, but it certainly looks black in the moonlight. And you can just about make out shapes inside. Are you trying to flag it down as it drives towards you? What are you doing?
Yeah, I think we're trying to flag it down. Like, just a, hey, holler.
Certainly make it obvious that we're here so we don't get run over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, certainly as it comes around the corner on the straight towards you, the headlights are on, and the headlights definitely pick you out. I mean, you can, you know, you're half blinded by them. And then at that stage, I mean, the car seems to slow down for a moment, and then the engine revs, and you hear the squeal of tyres as it starts to accelerate towards you.
Looks like the idiot's trying to run us over. Quick, off the road.
Oh, yeah, and I'll just I'll jump right here behind these two young fellas.
Okay. Well, I think then what I'd like is dodge rolls just to do this. I don't think there's much danger of you getting hit. You've got a bit of warning, but just to do this fairly gracefully as you are diving off the road.
Okay. I have a hard success.
I have a 94 versus 25.
Okay. Perhaps
top of the peg leg.
Left right out of your prosthetic leg.
I was about to say, perhaps it is because of the prosthetic leg. But as the Major jumps out of the way, he stumbles. And he just barely gets clear of the car and tumbles over, lands heavily in the ditch with a splash. So that means that he's not in a position to see, but the rest of you, if you'd like to make spot hidden rolls just to pick up anything as the car drives past.
Regular success.
Regular success, though.
I have a hard success.
Okay. So the two of you who've got regular successes, you can see that there are a number of people in the car. It's not like a single driver. It looks like there's probably four people in there. What Frida notices is that all of them appear to be wearing hats and, just in the bit of light that you see, they all look like they're dressed identically in black coats and hats, and they're all wearing glasses. And then the car speeds off.
Wearing their sunglasses at night.
A German synth pop band from the 80s has passed us.
And the car, was it like a like a fancy car, just like a Model T, or you
know, no? I mean, it looked like a fairly expensive, sort of a fairly recent model touring car of some description.
Okay.
Well, if those were the government workers that are supposed to be on the trench coats and the fedoras, I sure hope they're not using our taxpayer money for such a fancy car.
The major sort of drags himself out of the at the verge. I mean, is it wet? Is it, what's the? I mean, is it just sand?
Is the verge wet?
yeah, I mean, you haven't fallen into one of the saltwater channels, but the patch of reeds that you've fallen into is a bit soggy.
Oh, Major, my gosh. Here, let me give you a hand.
Oh, no, I'm all right. It's fine. He's clearly not. do you think that was on purpose? Did they see us? What were they thinking?
I don't know. It's either some rude teenagers skirting around in hats and coats, or it might be those government fellas, what was in the article that Elsie wrote.
Either way, it's strange. I think we should follow this road and see if we can find out where they've gone.
Yeah. Well, also, a car like that's probably a lot easier to find in a town like Ipswich, you know.
Oh, that's a nice point you make there.
I mean, you know, it's probably going to be something we can recognize a little bit easier come daylight, since, you know, a fancy car in a little town like this, not too many of those. But if Major's all right, I say we keep on going. Find that car, we're going to cut its tires.
Yeah. I mean, you were waving down and trying to get their attention. They have to have seen you.
Oh, yeah. And if I see them, I'm going to clock them one, too. Driving over the Major, a veteran of a war. Unbelievable.
No, it's fine. I mean, maybe they didn't see us. I don't know how they could have missed us there. Did you catch a good look at them? Did you see who was driving?
Well, they all look the same, and they're all wearing glasses, so I would assume they could see somebody. Unless their prescription's, you know, much expired.
Like brothers, or just similar looking?
Just dressed alike, you know. You know, in the circus, that was actually a pretty good trick, though, is making yourself look like somebody by just dressing alike, so. Could be brothers, maybe cousins. Scott, do I think it was like a uniform, a band of cousin brothers, or?
difficult to tell. You got some fairly quick impressions in the dark as a car drove past. So, yeah, I mean, you picked up only the vaguest outline of the details.
I'm not sure if it's a uniform.
Well, I say as long as the Major's doing good, I say we keep going.
I'm good for a few more miles.
Oh, wow, you can really go far on that one leg. That's pretty amazing.
But Scott, anytime we hit any intersections, I want to see about doing a track roll, see if I can follow that most recent set of tire tracks.
Sure.
See if we can
okay.
Do that. I mean, there's no turnoffs, don't matter, but whenever we find turnoffs, I do at least want to verify we're going the right way.
Right.
And where are we heading? Are we heading out to sea? Like, towards the sea?
You're heading in the rough direction of the coast, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, as you continue down the road, I mean, the air is getting colder, and there's a bit more of a chill in the air. And a couple of times, you think, just as the wind changes, you can hear the sound of that car's motor, or a car, off in the distance. And then, over towards the sea, or in that direction, all of a sudden, you see a... It's not like a light, or not like... Not like someone shining a flashlight or anything like that. There is this coloured ball of light, kind of a greenish-blue glowing, that just suddenly shoots up in the air. And then heads at speed over your heads and vanishes off towards town.
God damn it, I didn't have my camera ready.
And shall we leave this session there?
Yeah, that's a great place to end. Okay, well, thank you everyone for playing, and thank you everyone at home for listening to the introduction to our Flotsam and Jetsam playthrough. We'll do a quick sign off. So if you want to get a hold of me, my name is Joe Trier. You can find me on Twitter at JoeTheGM and also the podcast at HWR Podcast. We have a podcast Discord, which I highly recommend you check out. We have a Facebook page, Reddit page. You can contact us directly at howwellpodcast@gmail.com, and we also have a Patreon. Patreon is the absolute best way of supporting the show. Not only can you get early access to all episodes at least a week early, but you can also find a whole load of content which is only available on Patreon, so Call of Cthulhu scenarios, Cult Divinity Lost scenarios, and some other stuff as well. So patreon.com/howwellpodcast. Owen, again, thank you so much for playing. It was great seeing you again. Where can people find more of you?
Obviously, you can find me here on How We Roll, or on the How We Roll Discord, guys, under the How We Roll Owen name. I'm also on Twitter under the same name. Owen is Eoghan. And I do my own thing over on Twitch probably 3 to 4 days a week, depending on work, where we mostly play Football Manager at the moment. Once our new computer comes in, hoping to do Baldur's Gate, Cyberpunk, all the RPG-based stuff, so... Drop a follow over there and you can catch that in probably a month's time if graphic cards ever exist again.
Nice. And, I've checked out some of the... Again, Football Manager isn't my thing, but some of the other stuff you've done I've really enjoyed. So yeah, highly worth checking.
Football Manager is professional Excel spreadsheets. That's all it is.
And again, Seth, thank you so much for joining us again. It's a real pleasure to have you on board. Where can people find more of you? Is there anything you want to plug, share, or mention?
Well, You can find my YouTube is that's my biggest footprint, which is under the highly imaginative name Seth Skorkowski, and from there you can also find all of my novels. I am a novelist, which once again you search for my name, they're all over Amazon. You can find me on Twitter at S Skorkowski. Good luck spelling that mouthful, and that's pretty much it.
Nice. And again, I've read a couple of your books, and I highly recommend everyone checking them out. So again, Veronica, again, thank you so much for joining us again. It's a real pleasure tonight. Particularly love your character. Where can people find more of you? Anything you'd like to share, plug, mention?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter. I'm there political ranting every day at Typical Veronica. And if you want to follow my podcast, we release every Friday, St. Paxton Podcast. Same thing on Twitter. And we stream every Sunday night. So never go to church. Always come to our Twitch. We are twitch.tv/geeklyinc every Sunday at 8 Eastern. That's PM.
Amazing. And again, last but by no means least, again, thank you so much, Scott, for putting this together. I'm really excited to play it. I wanted to play through it since I saw it's released. And where can people find more of you? And I think you'd like to share, plug, mention?
Yes, thanks, Joe. If people want to find me, you can find me on Twitter at sdorwood. And again, like everyone else, good luck spelling that. if you want to find out more about the other things I do, the best place to look is blasphemoustomes.com, which is the home of the Good Friends of Jackson Elias podcast, which is the Call of Cthulhu podcast I do with my good friends Paul Fricker and Matt Sanderson, wherein we talk about, Call of Cthulhu, horror films, weird fiction, and other creepy stuff.